we begin this hour, like we do every Tuesday afternoon, by welcoming in the hardest working man in show business, writer Colin Fleming, who writes more on any given day than your supposedly favorite good writer does in a year, the difference being that Colin's stuff is actually good. Colin, thank you for joining us.
Ah, Hard Rock and Rich Kimball. Thanks for that.
You better believe it. What's going on in your world today?
Today, what's going on in my world is I wrote something on John Cheats for the Washington Post, and now I'm looking at various stat lines and baseball reference for you.
I appreciate that very much. Well, what shall we discuss first, the Baseball Hall of Fame or the Patriots?
How about we go with the Patriots up first?
Well, let's do that. And you have pointed this out many, many times. There is no evidence, really, if you look at the big picture, of any great decline in either Tom Brady or Rob Gronkowski this year that at least can't be attributed to injury more than age.
Gronkowski, certainly, I think we have injury. It's obvious that he's not getting the same separation, but there are weeks when he is the same player, when he's catching eight balls for 100-plus yards. And I thought in this past game that right away he established a kind of dominance over the Chargers where people often believe that you're only efficacious as a football player if you have the yards after carry, if you have a given number of touches. But there is a lot to a football game, and most of the players on the football field go the entire game, sometimes the entire season, with never touching the ball. And you play off the ball, and that's really more so, I think, where games are won and lost. And he basically curb-stomped that offense, that defensive line, rather, for the Chargers. And it was an attitude, it was an imposition of will, and he was opening up gashing holes for the backs, which opened up things for Tom Brady. Now, is that same value as six catches for 81 yards? It could be more. So I thought basically he has been effective in different ways when they need him to be. And as for Brady, I see a guy who's basically the same guy. His numbers are practically exactly where they were the year before when he won the MVP. And people are going to say, well, yeah, all right, but look at the other quarterbacks. Their stats are taking the roof off the top of the house. Like, all right, but it's, I look at it this way. The cookie is going to crumble the way the cookie crumbles. This is a game of chance. There's an aleatoric quality to football that sometimes the ball is going to pop out of the receiver's hands up into the air, and it's going to be a gift of an interception that I could make. Other times you're going to accidentally put the ball through a defensive back's hands, and whoa, look at that, drops right into my breadbasket, and I'm away to the end zone. And it just adds up over the year. And I think also that Miami game, that could happen one out of 250 times. It's just something that happens. If it doesn't happen, you're the same 12-4 you always are. So what does it really mean, 11-5, 13-3, 12-4, and you have a very high puncher's chance of doing what you do and getting back to the big dance? Then you take your chance.
Well, what they have the ability to do, certainly in the regular season, but especially in postseason, is, I guess, exert their Patriots mojo. Good coaches, good quarterbacks, see Philip Rivers, absolutely melt in the presence of Belichick and company.
Right. He was a mental puddle in that game. And to watch him come undone, and then having come undone, to turn to everyone within shouting distance and say, you are the reason, sir, referee, I have come undone. And you over here, Gates, you have made me come undone. It's like, sorry, dude, you have simply come undone. And there's always a team, it seems, every year, that is not the favorite team, it's not the one seed, that just coheres and gels at the right time. Sometimes you see it in the NHL playoffs, you get a hot goalie. But there is always that team in football. And I thought before this postseason to myself that the Patriots have never been that team. But things were syncing up here where they could be that team. And I didn't think that they were going to get past the Chargers. I thought the Chargers were the most balanced team. But I felt better about the Patriots this year than last year. Because the Patriots of last year could not stop anybody on defense. And that was eventually going to catch up with them. This year, I figured the defense can at least stop people. You do have the best quarterback ever. You have the best coach ever. You have a massively underrated backfield. You have a back that can slash and gash and run and do all of that. And you have the best catching back you've ever had, and you've had some good ones. Throw in things like you have a bye, you have Edelman getting healthy, you have maybe Gronkowski's last go-round, so if he has to leave his life force out there on the field for you and the Reaper comes to claim him, he's going to do that. I take my chances with that, and I figured going in there, the 15 to 20% chance of winning the entire thing, which might not be great, but as much as you might like the field over them, they were going to be right in this. And I think they have a very real flip-a-coin type of chance in Kansas City.
Everybody acknowledges Belichick's greatness as a coach. Occasionally people would criticize Belichick, the general manager, but I look at Exhibit A for his continued ability to find diamonds in the rough and to get guys nobody else thinks will be able to take care of business, and that would be Sony Michel.
Right. We are this kind of community of Eeyores, I feel like, in New England. And he gets criticized, like you said, for the general manager a bit. But you look at the results, more so than the five championships, what has happened over basically one-fifth of a century is unparalleled in the history of North American sports. There's nothing like what this team has done. The 13 AFC title games, that to me is more impressive than five Super Bowl championships. So I wonder then, how poorly do you ever really draft? Or is it a case of maybe people on the outside don't understand, one, the thought process, and two, the fact that the system is going to produce duds? Like in baseball, right? You go 1-for-3, screwed up twice, and you're a great star. Maybe you can only hit 333 as a general manager. And Michel, with his bone-on-bone condition, I wouldn't expect he's exactly going to be like Tony Dorsett and long for the league. Mm. But right now, you have a guy who is putting it together and who has health, who looks to me like a budding superstar. Now, he might not ever become a star, but right now, I think with him, you have house superstar money. And that's a great tandem they have, that great backfield tandem. You do not have it all bottled up in one guy, which is like what the Chargers used to have with LaDainian Tomlinson. So if you took him away, well, there's most of your problem solved. They have versatility, they have house money, and they have a real potency right now.
Well, and now Sunday they take on Andy Reid, who often outcoaches himself, and a very talented but somewhat inexperienced quarterback. I'm not a betting man, but if I were, I think I know which direction I would go in this one.
Reed's not exactly a master of mathematics, right? He can't manage the clock very well. But he gets his teams there, which pretty much puts him the rung below Belichick, that you know what you're going to get from an Andy Reid team most years. Sometimes in crunch time, he's fumbling timeouts away. That kind of thing is happening. And, yeah, you have a quarterback from, what, like Texas Tech? Sounds like it's going to be awfully cold in Kansas City. I think sometimes that can help take the crowd out of it, too. I know. If I was sitting there and it was 7 degrees, I want my freezy freakies on my hands. I don't want to be pulling them out. Like, yahoo, let's go with those Chiefs. Like, I don't know. I would just want to sit there, get through the day, and hope it works out. But it's a lot of pressure for a young quarterback, and the Chiefs are the team that, I don't know how it opened up, but I would expect they were 3-, 4-, 5-point favorites. They're expected to win this game. The Patriots have this thing going on right now where they're like, how dare you? How dare you, sir? Where they do that whole, you're disrespecting us, which is just kind of a mental prop, but it works for them. And people do think that they're not very good. They think it a little bit less now, but it's popular right now to always be throwing dirt on this grave and polishing up your shovel and saying they're done. And that always helps them do better than they might have otherwise.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Let's shift to the Baseball Hall of Fame. We are just, I think, a week away from finding out who gets in with the baseball writers' votes. I don't know. Overall, are you in favor of a more inclusive or exclusive hall?
I like when lots of guys get in.
Me too.
I think it's more of a travesty when someone is kept out who should be in than someone who gets in who people can make a case against. And I've noticed something very strange over the last few years. And let's remember, this is a sport. This is a game played by children, played for millions of dollars by adults. When you think of the terms, they can often lose their value. Like Hall of Fame, it's a silly term, right? We're so used to the term now. It's like Super Bowl, which part of the name was a pun on Super Bowl. And it was an extension of you have all these college bowl games. Now we just hear it, we accepted it. But at the time, it sounded like some comic bookian type of term. That's what the Hall of Fame has really become. And you saw this when Harold Baines was recently tabbed for whatever committee put him in. And rather than people saying, that's great, Harold, way to go, very solid player for a long time who was consistent across the span of his career, people were violently against this, to the point that it was almost like political discussion where decency and kindness to others and just maybe we feel differently about a given subject went out the window, and it became this diatribe fest. And I see a lot of that rancor now, and it's very strange. What's the problem with Harold Baines being in it? It doesn't change what Lou Gehrig did or what Ted Williams did. We know that they're better hitters than Harold Baines. And I think it's great for the guy. And I can see why it belongs in. 2,800 hits, and you're getting 23 home runs, 92 RBI every year, and he's just there for 20 years. And remember, you mentioned Dwight Evans. And I know people here in Boston love Dwight Evans, and I love Dwight Evans. But Dwight Evans was not a good offensive player. He was a sub-average player for like the first 10 years of his career.
Right.
And when you're evaluated at your work, say you worked there for 6 months, and for three of those months, you were awesome. But maybe for the first three, every day you showed up late, the cash till, it didn't add up with what it should have been. Like, that counts. It's not necessarily where you end up with in the end. It's that you do it regularly, or you're just some mercurial Sandy Koufax type of talent who puts it together for half a dozen years. So I look at this ballot, and I only see five guys that I'd be putting in. And I know that two of them people have a moral issue with, and Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, but you're so much better than everyone else. You're possibly the best ball player of all time, and if you're not the best pitcher of all time, you're in the top three. It's you, Lefty Grove, or Christy Mathewson, maybe Walter Johnson. It's top four. And then Curt Schilling, who no one likes anyone right now, but he should have been in before, and he would have been in before if people didn't dislike him so much. Roy Halladay. And to me, one of the three biggest omissions of all time for the Hall of Fame, it will sound like a strange name, is Fred McGriff, who was dominant for so long. His stats just don't look as voluminous as maybe they would because he played in a lower scoring era for a lot of his career.
I don't disagree with you on that. I think, even though maybe the stats were padded by playing in Colorado, but I think Larry Walker should be in.
Right. And everyone will say, too, I saw something ridiculous, though, that in Colorado they had like 10 batting champions. This is just insane. And you start to think, I don't normally care about that kind of thing, and humidors and whatnot. But when you see numbers like that, it's like, all right, well, what would you do if you played in Cleveland? Everyone, of course, Mariano Rivera, we don't even bring him up. He's going in. It's just going to be whether it's 100% or not. As you know, I don't really believe in the closer thing. I think there is limited value the way that position has worked, really, since Rivera started doing his thing, Eckersley before that. But to me, your Hall of Fame resume isn't just what you've done for your team. You get demerited for what you have cost your team. And I can't think of a single player in the history of Major League Baseball who single-handedly cost his team two World Championships, which is what Rivera did in 2001. And then he reprised that in 2004. And Lee Smith, of course, is going in. And I'm not saying to anybody that Lee Smith was a better pitcher than Mariano Rivera, because obviously he wasn't. But when you look at relievers, it's like, what do you do with these guys? You have someone come in, you pull a Craig Kimbrell, and it's 5-2, and you get out of there, and it's 5-4, and it's like, hey, here's a stat. Everyone who gets the opportunity to close gets their 35 or 45 or whatever
right.
It is amount of saves. Like,
oh my
Applebaum.
God. Right. Jose Mesa was about 53 years old and still getting 35 saves a year.
Right. I've been thinking about who the best relievers ever are. And the number one guy, talk about career value. He has the strangest career, basically, in the history of baseball, is Hoyt Wilhelm. Now, he doesn't come into baseball until he's 29 years old because he's off doing war stuff.
Yeah, survive the Battle of the Bulge, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, he comes in, he's 29, and he's still going to get in a 21-year career. So he comes in his first year, he goes 15-3. He finishes, he pitches 159 innings. He's a relief pitcher. But look at this stat line. In 1965, the dude is 42 years old. He has an ERA of 181, and he pitches 144 innings out of the bullpen. In 1959, the Orioles needed him to be a starter, and all he did was lead the league in ERA at 2.19. Every year, you are getting innings from this guy. It's like, oh, it's the sixth inning. Can you close this out? Yep. He averages per 162 games, 137 innings. And that, to me, was why there is more value in, I know he does the old man, get off my lawn kind of thing now, the game is so bad, but in Rich Gossage or Bruce Sutter, that these guys were coming in. And that's one of the many things I could never stand about Kimbrel, who, God help me, might be coming back to the Red Sox. Everyone is smart enough not to pay him the crazy amount of money he wants, was that he's like, oh, please, can you give me a nice clean inning? I don't want to come in with anyone making the bases all dirty. I would just like it to be easy today. It's like, come on, dude. This is what you should live for. And every time it was a non-save situation and he couldn't rack up his precious stat, he was garbage. So Hoyt Wilhelm and then Dennis Eckersley was so dominant. But the whole closer thing, I don't like many of these guys for the Hall of Fame because I think, and the Red Sox postseason just showed you, you can figure out a way to do it that you basically are writing the closer out of the game.
Well, yes.
The Rover and everything. Like, we don't need to have this ultra niche specialist.
Well, no. And the two things that I would say, and I agree with you on that, is first of all, you're putting guys in the Hall of Fame for a stat that was essentially created out of the mist that really didn't exist for much of baseball's history. And you see a lot of managers today who will say, yes, we have a closer, but our best reliever is not the guy we bring in at the end of the game for those clean innings that Kimbrel wants, but they come in the high leverage situations in the seventh or the eighth.
Look at the Indians, right?
A few years
ago, how they weaponized Andrew Miller. And that was a problem for that Cubs team. That Cubs team thought that it was going to be one of these all-time great teams. And they barely got their collective hindquarters out ahead at the end of that series because you didn't know when Andrew Miller was coming in. He's coming in the fifth. But Andrew Miller had no incentive financially to be as dominant as he could be as a pitcher because it comes down to the precious save, which is, figure, how many percentage – what's the percentage for like saves that are like one run? I would think just mathematically, right? We're dealing with three things here, basically, that most of your saves are two or three run differential saves. So a lot of times you need to maintain an ERA below like what, 27? And it works out for you. And I just don't find that there's a lot of, we talk about value. Belichick talks about value. What's the value in that? The value in that, to me, is the postseason. You come in, and it is over. You have shaved an inning off the other team's chances for victory. And when I was watching the Yankees and the Red Sox, and Mariano Rivera came in, I liked my chances. If I feel like I like my chances against you, you're not quite what people say you are. And I think about like what Yankees teams would not have won without this guy. And the 98 team, the 1998 Yankees might be, it upsets me to say this, the best baseball team ever. So I want that guy who can come in, who doesn't need everything, like he's this milksop arranged for him a certain way, and is just going to mow people down, whether it's seventh, the eighth, or the seventh through the ninth. So, yeah, I like DHs a lot more in the Hall of Fame than closers.
Enter Sandman. That is Colin Fleming talking baseball and Patriots with us. Hey, when this year and when and where can we see your piece on The Sopranos? I look forward to that as well.
I have to find a buyer.
Oh, okay.
do you know somebody? Yeah, I'm working to sell it. If I can't sell it to somebody, although this decreases my leverage in being able to sell it, I'll slap it up in the blog or something like that.
I can't get things in the coffee news. I'm the last guy to talk.
Yeah, okay. Well, you'll see it someplace.
I look forward to it. Check out Colin's work on his website, colinfleminglit.com. Hey, my friend, we appreciate it. As always, let's do it again next Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good.
Colin Fleming with us on Downtown.